Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Carolina Connections, the radio show where business leaders connect.
Hey, I'm Larry Stefan, the General Manager of the Wireless Resource Center. Welcome you to Business Radio X and our show, Wireless Connections. Thank you for listening. We have quite a few guests here today, and we have a really exciting topic. We're going to talk about IoT. We're going to talk about the Wake Forest Wireless Resource Center, and we're going to talk about the riot we're going to have coming up in Q1. But first, I want to maybe go around the room and introduce our guests. So we have Dr. Jerry Hayes, the president and CEO and founder of the Wireless Resource Center. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, good morning, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And then we have Scott Claggett from Thingovation.
Thanks, Larry.
A little more. Come on.
I'm Scott Claggett with Thingovation. I'm the program director and handle all the projects we have currently, as well as providing strategic, competitive, and market intelligence for clients.
And then we have Michael Wayne from Qualia Networks.
Thanks for having me, Larry. I am the co-founder of Qualia Networks. I head up communications and recruitment of the board, the management team, and the interns.
And then we have Lauren. Don't make me ruin your name. I'm going to ruin it now for the pressure of a radio mic in front of me. How do you say it again?
It's Onus Orge. I'm with the Triangle Business Journal and been the technology writer there for about 3 years, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about IoT and Wake Forest.
Yeah. So, and then we have David Houghton from Bright Wolf.
Laura has a little too much presence for me. She's got this nailed. Lauren's got this nailed. I'm David Houghton with Bright Wolf, and we're an IoT software company.
Okay. Well, welcome to the radio station, and welcome to our show. So let's get started. Michael, you're new to the Wireless Resource Center. Tell us why you moved here, and tell us a little bit about your background and your company.
Sure. So I'll start with my background. I'm a second-generation entrepreneur. Both my parents were entrepreneurs. They actually met in my dad's first startup, which was one of the first TCP/IP product companies in the U.S. in 1980. After moving to North Carolina, I got involved with entrepreneurship by way of working at a coffee shop in Cary. I met a lot of technology executives, entrepreneurs, investors, and I started matchmaking between them kind of just as a hobby. And then I started getting recruited by startups. The first one was in the nanotechnology space. It was a company that spun out from NC State called Xanify. One of their board members recruited me to help them raise their seed round, and I accepted, of course. I mean, it was a great opportunity. And he introduced me to the CEO, Miles Wright, who gave me really my first opportunity here in the Triangle to, you know, prove my mettle. I'm not entirely sure that they actually took capital from the investors that I brought to the table, but it taught me how to network effectively.
So was that Raj?
What's that?
Was that Raj who recruited you, or
no, Raja? It was actually Moss Withers. He's a real estate broker at NAI Care Atlantic, but he also wrote the business plan for him when they spun out from NC State. Okay. And then after that, I started getting recruited by other startups out of the state. One was in software, another one was in intelligent transportation systems. And then, of course, my father recruited me into his company, which was a consulting firm at the time. We had he had won a connected vehicle contract with California Department of Transportation. So we had our own test bed. We were working with first responders. And from that, you know, we really saw the Internet of Things as the next up and coming trend. And specifically the decentralized computing. So unlike cloud computing, you know, it's at the edge. It's localized computing, it's localized stores, localized analytics, and it's autonomous decision making. So that's really what drew us into the Internet of Things. And the reason that we're here in Wake Forest is we had heard about your background actually at Boca Research. George was very fond of the company.
You're really dating me, you know that.
I am. You know, I love dinosaurs too. That I'm just kidding.
I'm very proud of being a dinosaur.
I know. I'm just teasing you. But one of the research facilities that you have here for over the air testing, that's pretty huge for us, because these are our first product. We call it Chariot. It's essentially a reference design for sensor nodes in IPv6 low power mesh networks. And so we have to have testing for that. And the fact that you offer it and the fact that you have an incubator for all the IoT startups, really the top companies that are in the Triangle, that right there brought us right to Wake Forest. So we're very glad to be here.
Thank you. Scott, tell us a little bit more about Thingovations and how you got involved in the Wireless Research Center, and why is IoT so important to Thingovation?
Well, Thingovation spun out of a general consulting services providing companies that had very little expertise in wireless and were trying to navigate the market. And it just happened to spin out where a company was very happy with all the services, providing them, you know, general strategy, portfolio planning, kind of a deep understanding of the wireless market. And they said, this is all great information, but, you know, the pain is, how do we build this product? We need an IoT product. And they looked at us and said, we want you to build it. And the two partners, you know, our backgrounds come from Sony Ericsson and HTC, and the third partner is basically software-based, so in several different gaming companies. And we thought about it, and we looked back at our network, which is, all, again, all the Sony Ericsson people, and look into the Triangle area, and you have hardware, you have RF, you have, we had ID contacts, and then we had the wireless center. And it just kind of, we sat back and said, we can offer this solution. We can deliver, you know, products for clients. And, you know, so many companies out there need products. They don't have the expertise to do so. And one area where it's extremely challenging is going to be on the wireless, particularly for cellular. And that's what drew us to the Wireless Center. There's very few companies out there or locations that have this type of expertise anywhere in America outside of the handset OEMs. And so Chris Hare, who was the founder of Thingovation, set up shop here previously with Entity, and it was just a natural extension to keep Thingovation here as we move forward in helping companies create smart products.
Good stuff. Quick point, how much of your focus is on the commercial side versus the technical side, and how do you balance that?
Well, for me, primarily it is managing the client and helping them understand the technology. We work with partners that focus on the technology for us, and we kind of bridge that gap between the client and the customer. Our goal is to try to keep the client with enough knowledge to understand what they're getting into, all the challenges that go with building a product, because a lot of companies think, hey, IoT is easy. You just build a product, you put in some components, but there's just so much more to it. You know, it's getting the software to work with the IT. It's getting the RF to meet certifications at the operators. There's a whole level of testing. So it's one thing you build a product out, but then it's a level of testing. So we manage both levels, but our focus is really to manage the commercial side with the client and then ensure that on the back end all the technology is being built for them.
Okay. What's the biggest challenge you've noticed with IoT?
Well, currently, a lot of customers, newer customers, that just don't have the technology expertise. So they may have a little bit more familiarity with software, they may have some hardware, but they still don't know the little pieces that all go into it. And so it's one thing to, you know, to get them involved, but it's trying to educate them through the process and all the steps that go into it. And that's been a real challenge there. But the big challenge really with IoT is we're seeing the smaller you get, particularly with cellular, the antenna becomes a big factor. It's the antenna and the battery. And when you put those two things into an IoT product, it expands it. So those are challenges right there that we're trying to educate clients. I know you want it small, but the physics of the technology today is limiting that.
Hey, Jerry, maybe you can jump in here and talk about how we pull the resources together, the Wireless Center, and how the commercialization maybe stands apart from some of the other incubation or acceleration programs going on, not only here in North Carolina, but generally speaking.
Sure, sure. The Wireless Center started in 2010, and it's part of our unique ecosystem that we're forming. We have a very unique mission in that we're economic development is why we were founded. Prior to the center, there was Ericsson, Sony Ericsson, and Nortel here in the Research Triangle region. And when they had left, a lot of the talent stayed in the area, and we provided a focal point for that. And this was right at the cusp of machine to machine, just prior to the Internet of Things taking off. We had seen the coming of the emerging market of the IoT space, and we knew that the talent to be able to realize these products. And we offered the unique center is doesn't hold any intellectual property. So we create a really safe environment for people with ideas and concepts to come share it and expand on that. And we house an incubation center, commercialization center, where You know, you guys are here present where you get to collaborate. It's all about collaboration and working together.
Okay. David, tell us why a software company is in the middle of this technology center that looks like a hardware center.
This hardware network play? It's a great question. To be honest, we're here because of we're originally here because of proximity to location in terms of where the people were. And we thought that the offices and the environment you provided would be conducive to the development and the customer support component of our business. However, having spent time here now, approaching a year, the serendipity associated with being aligned and affiliated with the hardware plays has created unique opportunities to create this virtual ecosystem that exists here in Wake Forest. And so certainly things, smart things, are the play in the Internet of Things, or IoT, as we like to say. But we're the software that connects to those things and allows you to do the analytics, allows you to generate the alerts and the actions, and ultimately to provide the updates to the enterprise. And so that's our sweet spot. So allowing those smart things to come to life is where we play. And so the opportunity to work with the players in this space allows us to create a full end-to-end solution. There's no one company that's doing that right now, and I think that's what's unique about what's taking place here.
Before we move on to Lauren, which we want to go get to very shortly, tell us about your customers and some of the challenges you see from your customers. And that's going to come back to Scott as well. I want you to think about that question. But
it's a good question. So we find customers who often have devices that are relatively dumb. Maybe they have some connectivity.
The customers or the device?
That's a good point. If I wasn't clear, I should say the device.
Okay.
Device. And they certainly recognize the need or have the interest in better better managing and understanding that device and making it smarter. But the challenges associated with that aren't trivial. These devices can live 10 years in the field. They often don't ever see them. Unless there's a maintenance call and somebody's going out there. And so if they can connect with those devices and begin to capture that data, it allows them to increase the manageability of the device, manage warranty better, improve performance, customer satisfaction, drive down costs, lots of business drivers behind it. However, they don't necessarily appreciate the dynamics associated with connecting to devices like that and the real-time nature of capturing that information, the high volumes, the variability of the data. As well as the impact that could have in the enterprise system. And so their challenge is, I have a development team, I have a support organization geared towards driving my enterprise, but the skill sets associated with that enterprise and what's needed in a connected system are very different. And so we help bridge that gap, not just from a software perspective, but also from a talent and a connected systems experience perspective. And that's fundamental to rolling these out, because there's lots of hidden I'll call them idiosyncrasies associated with living in this world.
Lauren, what do you think about IoT space? Is it real? Is it going to happen? How does it affect our region in a whole?
Well, I mean, it's definitely going to happen. I don't think anybody out there is arguing that IoT is dying. If anything, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the biggest challenge that we have in this area is how do we get all these pieces together? How do we get this powered? You hear a lot of talk here about fiber. Fiber has been a huge story here in 2014, and I think we're going to hear more about that in 2015. I mean, we have announcements expected in the next couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and all of that connects back to this IoT. It's sort of powering the next generation of entrepreneurship. It's exciting stuff.
So you actually raised an interesting observation from a dinosaur, right?
I try.
So I remember, what was it, 1990-something, 95, 98, when everybody was trenching throughout the entire country, dropping all this fiber down, right? And all this, millions and millions of miles of fiber laid through the metro area. I don't know the number anymore, but there used to be a statistic that said most of that fiber is dark, and most of it still remains dark. Now, so there's two questions. A, how do we light up that fiber? Because you're right. I think the more we can do with the IoT of things, the more that we can commercialize a lot of opportunities for us. But the same design, how do we not repeat what happened, right? How do we not optimize this market opportunity? That's a question for the whole room. I'm not trying to put poor Lauren on the spot. That's a pretty intense question. But think about that. You know, yes, this has all happened, but is it the fury before the storm, and there's no storm after all, and that this is not a wave that actually crests? Or is it really, a milestone in terms of opportunity from an economic point of view? So let me simplify the question. What are your concerns about IoT in terms of beyond the pipe, the fiber pipe, but beyond in terms of what we can make this area here to be a real focus area globally?
Well, I think it can definitely be a focus area globally. I mean, we have the talent here, and that's what you need. You need the talent, but you also need the infrastructure. So I go back to that point again. I think that is huge. I think that is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, issues that this area has. And I'm not just talking about the Triangle of North Carolina. I mean, look at the United States in general, at where we are as opposed to where some other areas are. It's a huge economic drawback. And I think that the recent efforts that have been made to really push that up, in particular with the Triangle. I mean, we obviously have all heard about the Google Fiber announcement in Raleigh and Durham and places like that. And then there's RST Fiber in Wake Forest and AT&T. It's not a coincidence that all of these names are talking about the Triangle right now. It's a big world. And the Triangle keeps coming up in the conversations that all of these telecoms are having. And I don't think that that's a coincidence. They're not just pinpointing us because we have NC State and UNC. They're pinpointing us because we have talent, and not just from the universities, but from RTP, from efforts like this.
I thought they were pinpointing us because we have the Wireless Research Center.
Yes, that too.
And then we're going to change the name from the Triangle to the Rectangle.
Well, I know for a fact that RST Fiber, if they were having their conversations about where to start, and obviously there are some questions about the timing there, but they have, I know that they've been in discussions that's with right. their Wireless yeah. Research Center.
That's right, that's right. Just to be fair, to make sure we have everybody chatting equally here. Michael, who are your customers, and when do you plan to have your product delivered to market? Before I do that, I do want to come back, because you're going to open up a can of worms here in the digital divide, right? Which is the access to fiber and access to the equal amount of lanes of traffic, right? And that's a whole nother conversation, but passionate again to this dinosaur. So tell us about your customers and who you want to get to and who you want to reach.
Sure. So we started off our product development this past year, building our first product, of course. We call it Chariot. We decided to make a bet on hardware. We decided to make a bet on open source and open standard hardware, because in the Internet of Things, you have to have federated systems. Systems have to be interoperable, and they have to be interchangeable. And so from every investor that we talked to, we were told it was a terrible idea to bet on the Arduino community. But the Arduino community is really the biggest community of developers for IoT devices, because really, what is an IoT device? It's an interactive object.
You may want to stop for a second. What is Arduino for the audience that's not as sophisticated as I am?
Sure. So Arduino started in Italy in 2005 by a couple of professors that wanted to teach their students, their design students, how to build interactive objects, but they kept running into the same problem. That problem was proprietary licenses. Licenses on software and licenses on hardware. So they went and they got Atmel as their corporate sponsor, and they got Atmel to open up some of their 8-bit microcontroller designs and to actually share that with the world. So very similar to how open source software works, where you have a global development community, the Linux community. Now you have the Arduino community. You also have the Raspberry Pi community. That's kind mm-hmm. of a different ballgame. But the Arduino community is very creative. It's part of the maker movement. The maker movement, of course, is very popular, and it's well regarded for championing 3D printing. So all the buzz that you hear from 3D printing, it came out of the maker movement. The maker movement is strictly about making things.
So if you could have a customer today, who would that customer be? Not necessarily by name, just tell me like...
Sure. So there's two different customer sets. So there's the Arduino community, which is strictly e-commerce, and then there's the enterprise customers. Right. So enterprise customers that have been working with proprietary big data real-time solutions, that's perfect for us, because all Qualia really does is we're machine learning coupled with IPv6 mesh sensor networks. So essentially you take small data, you don't need to, you know, jam a bunch of data through a data pipe, transport it to your IT infrastructure, suck up your computing resources. You can actually pool sensing and computing resources at the edge through mesh networks. So one customer in particular that we're working with very diligently with right now is he's a reseller of gunshot detection systems. So gunshot detection systems, while they're very useful, of course, for apprehension of suspects that are firing weapons in cities, venues, wherever it might be, it's not a scalable business as of yet because the cost of the solution is way too high for the customer. The customer can't deploy millions of nodes with gunshot detection and microphone capabilities. But with our platform, they can because it's very low cost. It uses very little data, and it enables you to do essentially rapid interdiction with police officers. Okay. So it's there's a lot of opportunities out there for us, and so we're biding our time, and we are picking the right ones for us.
Scott, who are your customers? Who do you want to reach out to, and who would you? Again, you don't need to give us names, but talk in terms of the generic, right?
Well, really, our customers range from a number of different industries, from the automotive to governments to global operators, associations. I mean, it really comes down to anybody that wants to build a smart connected device. And, you know, ideally, it's someone that has some familiarity with this, but at the same time, we'll work with customers now that really have no experience in it. We've worked with a fairly old organization where the board recognized that, you know, they need some kind of connected device, and this board has no experience or understanding of technology at all. So, you know, that's where some of the challenges, if you brought back earlier or asked, is working with companies that just don't understand the space, but they know they need it. And so that's where we've been able to leverage our experience in consulting over many years to help people understand what it takes to actually build this product, but then we can rely on our network to actually deliver, you know, the product they need.
Okay, good stuff. One of the ways to make the maximize the fiber that we do have laid in the ground that's too dark for my liking is to have mixed technology delivering to the endpoints of the CPE. Obviously, a fixed wired solution like fiber to the home is great. But Jerry, talk about the other options beyond fixed wire to the home.
The wireless solutions that we're looking at, multiple platforms and you know, different applications. We've got a strong emphasis on the rural and underserved areas too. We received a couple of grants from the Golden Leaf to help, you know, bridge that digital divide throughout the state and throughout the region. Here at the Wireless Center, we're agnostic with respect to, you know, the technology for that wireless link. And a lot of it, you know, it is becoming more and more cost effective, too. So the cost price are coming down. So we're able to do point to multi-point types of solutions. A lot of it is getting that connectivity to the people with the initiative, with the ideas as well, and to the schools. That's where all of this is going to come to fruition. It's pretty neat to watch the passion, you know, in the Triangle region, you know, and the collaboration that everyone fosters. You know, everyone's willing to work together.
In the rectangle, he meant. Just to qualify and to clarify that. So I can't help it. Okay, so we're going to do a third riot. The plan is to do our third riot in January of next year. Edition, I guess, next year, right? It's right around the corner, 2015. Saying that really qualifies me as a dinosaur from other points. But you've seen a couple. I think you've been to both riots. And what do you think is the energy level at the riot? And what do you think the purpose, from your perspective, that we serve? We know what we want to do. How do you think that's working? And what would you encourage people to come to the next riot?
Definitely. It's great. There are so many opportunities in this area for people to come out and connect and network. And obviously, there are lots of reasons to come to events like Riot. But for me, the big draw is the people themselves. It's not necessarily the agenda. It's the people that you get to meet and the ideas that are circulating. I find a lot of value in conversations just with people at the event. So yes, I think that people should definitely check it out if they have an interest in this.
Thank you. David, since Bright Wolf is going to be presenting at the next riot, tell us why people should come listen to the wonderful words of Bright Wolf.
Okay. First, the riots are terrific because it's a chance to interact with people face-to-face, as you said. And the reality is serendipity.
By the way, I'm sorry. We should probably tell people as we're broadcasting this what riot means. I don't know if we did we?
No, we didn't. Go ahead.
It's called the North Carolina Carolina Regional Internet of Things, and originally started out the Raleigh Internet of Things, but our intent, you know, is to be as inclusive as possible. If we keep it in one location, it doesn't really include the entire area and maybe the entire state, because we always should look at the world bigger than our own little location. So the RIOT stands for Regional Internet of Things, or originally Raleigh Internet of Things, but it's all about trying to create an environment where people feel included and that anybody with a good idea can maybe meet the right people to move that idea forward. I'm sorry, David.
No worries. So if you think about the RIOT, it's actually a natural extension to what's happening here in Wake Forest with the Wireless Research Center. There's critical mass here in terms of the skill sets, the capabilities, and the capacities associated with putting together an end-to-end IoT system. We take that, we move it into a RIOT, and now you're expanding beyond the Wake Forest community into the entire rectangle or triangle, depending on how you want to look at it. And it's a chance to bring those people out of their offices and get them face-to-face. And that's where we're going to see serendipity and innovation begin to happen. Connecting with people over the internet certainly is useful, but there's nothing better than face-to-face, and it's a chance to bump into those folks. From White Wolf's perspective, as we were talking earlier, I think we're seeing the costs come down, we're seeing size shrink, and we're seeing capabilities increase, which is allowing for what we like to refer to as an intelligent edge, which is exactly where Michael's playing. And because of that, we're going to see dumb things become smarter. And that's a sweet spot for Bright Wolf. We're a software IoT platform. It's a horizontal play across all the industries. And we work with our clients in the particular verticals to create unique custom implementations. And so we'd like to say we bring the software and the platform. We bring the connected systems experience. And we rely on our clients to bring the domain experience. And with that, we can create a unique opportunity and a unique solution to connect everything that's existing. And so this community, with respect to the RIOT, has a chance to provide unlimited value in terms of creating these types of solutions. And it's literally almost overwhelming to think about the amount of energy that's going on in this space. And certainly the software that allows those things to talk is where we play.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the Wireless Resource Center and several of the companies are going out to CES. We're going out there as a collective group to bring the message out to the rest of the universe that we're here. We're in North Carolina, and we can help facilitate any sort of vision or support that you need to deliver your product to market. So we'll be at the Eureka Park section of CES. That's where startups go, and most of what's around us is companies like home automation, telemedicine devices, or medical devices, I shouldn't say necessarily telemedicine devices. A lot of different variation of wearable projects will be out there. So we're going to immerse ourselves into CES and let people know at CES that we are going to be there. We'll be. I should have had the booth number, but I'm sure not that many people are really worried about our booth. You can look us up. We're listed at the Wireless Research Center in Eureka Park. So, and it's also, from the other side of the point, we want to learn more. We want to see what's going out in CES and what the rest of the universe is seeing and what are the obstacles to bring these projects and products to market. And sometimes we say product too often. It's really projects, because it's more about what the need is, right? What is the problem that's being tried to be addressed here with these tools? The other point we may want to chat about, and maybe this is a good question for Jerry, but technology is never the limiting source here. We do not have an iota of intimidation here in terms of that we know with the partners we have here at the Wireless Center that whatever we think about can be done. And if there's a gap, if there's a next-generation processor, next-generation Wi-Fi radio, the resources, whether we contact people like Atmel, we contact Broadcom, whatever it may mean, we know the universe because of all these years of experience, we can bring it to the discussion table. So, Jerry, talk about the technology that you see that is kind of moving forward here maybe making these concepts more of an easier reality for some of the startup companies.
So yeah, we're seeing a lot of things ranging from commercial off-the-shelf types of applications, the Zigbee, Bluetooth, typical wireless LAN type of applications, up through some more custom products, and then including the cellular. The neat thing about the Wireless Center, you know, we are agnostic on that. In the areas, and being a 501c3 where we don't hold any intellectual property, we're able to engage companies on that level of where they are. So we can place that need. If you need a, like we're members of Assist with NC State, so doing on-body sensors, you know, and they require low duty factor, very low power communication links, you know, so a wireless LAN wouldn't fit for that. And if something needs to be developed, we can engage the other universities to do a more proprietary type of application. So we handle wireless medical devices through consumer electronics and then in the DoD space as well. So we speak a pretty broad language.
So Lauren, what is the perception of IoT market from the Triangle Business Journal? What did they think in terms of what's happening? Who's the hottest company besides the wireless center?
Well, we are excited about it. There are a lot of really great opportunities in the Triangle. One I've been watching is K4 Connect out of, I'm sure Scott, you know, Moody. Scott Moody. Yeah, he came out of Authentech. If you're not familiar with Authentech, it's a Florida company that was sold to Apple. And prior to its sale, it invented a little technology known as Touch ID now. So he is now looking outside of that space. He's looking in the home, quite literally. He's looking in elderly care, all sorts of areas with that. So that's a pretty exciting story. You guys know me. I'm very interested in the people, not just the technology. I'm interested in the narrative behind it, especially with startups being what they are. Startups can fail, but people, not so much.
We stick around, right?
People stick around. People have
hopefully
incredible ideas. All it takes is one really good idea, right?
Yeah, we should have Scott come on board and have a conversation about K4 Connect and so forth. The home automation market so one of the observations we've seen over time is that the home automation market is a bit of a wild, wild west environment. But there is so much available technology to deliver so many services to it that there really hasn't been a clear standardization of what should be done. And there's there is basically a land grab by some of these companies to kind of own space, like Nest and Google and so forth. And I guess they're one of the same today, right? You know, the security companies. And I'm wondering how this, again, if you look at market shifts and market changes, you see an emerging market that looks so different than when it really matures. So there are so many, many players coming into the new markets like this, home automation, healthcare management, and so forth. What is it going to look like after several years or maybe a couple of decades? Is it going to be commoditized and standardized, or is it going to be continue to be some of these vertical application? I'll throw that out to the floor if anybody wants to jump in.
Or even 5 years from now. I was speaking with entrepreneurs whose dream, they say, you know, in 5 years, you're going to be on your way home. Your house is going to know you're on your way home. There will be a cold beer that's waiting for you. The door will open as you step up the step. I mean, there are some pretty interesting ideas that might not be that far off. Yeah.
And that goes back to, so the technology is not the limitation. It's the market adoption that may be the challenge. So how does that get, again, adopted into the marketplace? That's a question.
And the support infrastructure.
Market adoption. So this is again from a dinosaur, right?
Shouldn't have used that term.
No. Jerry will tell you I refer to myself as a dinosaur. Just for a quick joke, anybody wants to go online and look at my LinkedIn picture. I was talking to a good dear friend of mine yesterday, and I was trying to help him out with trying to find a job, and he looked at my LinkedIn picture. He goes, "Is that from high school?" it was cruel, right? But anyway, it is amazing, there's a lot of technology that has an opportunity to go somewhere, and I've seen a lot of technology come here that never reaches its potential, and it's always that. So I'm a marketeer, right? I was trained as a marketeer, and when I grew companies, I always said it's marketing stupid, you know, take away from the first Bush, right? Isn't that the one that got nailed on that? It was economy stupid. So it's marketing stupid because, you know, if you don't let people believe that they need what they need, or they don't need but they think they need it. The Apple iPhone, right? You know, what do we need from Apple that we can't get from everybody else? So a lot of these discussions. So what? The point is, I guess I'll get back to back between the rails here. The point is that yes, I think there's a great many things that can be done. In fact, everything we just mentioned about the doing a cold beer, opening the front door, that's there. There is absolutely companies that can do all this technology. There are RFID companies can actually go and measure how much milk you have left. And if the network is in place and people are willing to use it, they could tell you that your 1/3 of your milk is gone, so you better go out and buy another gallon of milk, whatever. So it's all there. But what is the real hurdle that makes a move forward, right? Go ahead, Michael.
I think one of the big hurdles is you constantly see more and more smartphone apps or tablet apps or whatever, but people don't want that in their home. People want reactive systems in their home. They want their home, just like you guys were just talking about, they want it to react to you. I want my technology to be my slave. I want a Roomba that can deliver me a beer. I want, you know, I want a lot of different things. I want a Roomba that can maybe pick up after my dog, whatever that might be.
Okay.
You know, you want systems that react to you. So instead of me having to push a button, I don't want to push a button. I want it to know me. I want it to know my parameters. So I want systems to essentially prioritize themselves for me, without me having to do anything but walk into distance wherever, you know, wherever I might be. If I'm out in the green, if I'm, you know, out in my backyard, if I'm in my pool, I'm in my jacuzzi. I want apps that essentially automate mundane tasks in my life. I don't want to have to deal with a smartphone app for that.
Yep. So what you're saying, it's really the user experience.
Right.
That's a great point.
Well, there are also security concerns. If you think about this is a broad concept, cars that drive themselves, there are all sorts of security concerns that are limiting adoption. And I think that these types of applications will be watched incredibly closely over the next couple of years. And depending on what happens, I mean, that's how fast we move forward on some of these applications.
Absolutely. Right, but on the autonomous cars, security, sure, it's a concern, but at the same time, 83% of roadway deaths are results of human error. So if you automate the human out of that process, you can automate a lot more, you can save a lot more lives. So well, that was kind of our contract with California Department of Transportation. That was pretty much the point of it. It was all safety-related applications. So that's the big market driver for autonomous vehicles. Well,
I think in general, although the technology is there, there's still a bit of a cost issue. The advances that we're seeing at the home, for example, using your phone to adjust your blinds and things like that, isn't actually very sexy when you start to think about it, right? So I got to take my phone, I got to swipe it, I got to put in my code, right? Then I got to open up the app, and then I got to identify, once I get into the app, then I can determine, do I want to raise my blinds or lower my blinds? That's not very elegant. It's cheap and inexpensive, but not very elegant. I think where you were going, Michael, in terms of a more intuitive environment that is able to understand who you are as an individual and what you're trying to do, and it can operate there so appropriately, is where things are going. But I don't think the costs are quite there. Some of the barriers associated with that have to do with the lack of standards, right? So a lot of proprietary solutions, individual solutions, blinds versus TVs versus refrigerators that need to come together mm-hmm. for a holistic solution to some of the barriers. Secondly, as you mentioned, privacy is a big issue in security, and so getting that right is going to be a big deal. And then thirdly, pulling this together from a systems integration perspective, and somebody who's going to own and provide that end-to-end solution is going to require a significant amount of effort, and I don't think we're quite there yet. Having said all that, that's the home. I think in the industrial space, much of the technology exists today, and it's literally putting the solutions in place. The cost justification exists, and those are beginning to deploy faster than people are probably aware of. And I think we're going to see significant growth take place on that side while they continue to nibble at the edges in the home market.
Interesting. You know, I think we just came up with our next topic for IoT, right? What are the obstacles for adoption in IoT mm-hmm. market space, right? Mm-hmm. How do we move it forward, and what are some of the challenges or, again, opportunities? So before we sign off and we say goodbye to everybody today, would anybody like to have a couple words? Anybody? Come on, Laura.
Sure. Well, there's another company in Raleigh, Valencell. I don't know how familiar you are. Yeah, they are actually doing some of these quote-unquote mundane tasks that we were just talking about. There, for example, there are possibilities there of an earpiece that knows your ideal sleeping temperature. So if you are having difficulty sleeping, it could automatically change the temperature control in your house. I mean, there are things that are being done right now, and it's exciting. I'm excited to be able to cover it. So if anyone has any story ideas for me, feel free to pass those along.
Oh, I may be annoying you on a daily basis.
Well, Twitter is a great way to get in touch with me.
Not for a dinosaur.
at Tribus Tech is my Twitter handle, so reach out anytime, all the time.
Thank you very much for reminding me to do some homework. So, Plea, give me your contact information. People can reach Lauren.
I'll do it.
Do it one more time. I'm sorry. I think I kind of talked over you.
Oh, it's at TriBizTech. It's my Twitter handle. So that's the best way that you won't have to spell my last name to get in touch with me.
Okay. Michael, I'm sorry. We want to give this. I'm sorry. I'm looking. Give us how the best way to reach you, and maybe give us a closing comment real fast.
Sure. My Twitter handle is at Qualia, which is Qualia Networks. And just my closing comment. I think one of the really limiting factors of the Triangle, and has historically been so, is venture capital. I just wanted to, you know, tell the community about a new venture capital a new venture capital fund being formed by Daniel Friel and Igor Jablokov, called Cornerstone Ventures. They're going after the big corporate venture capital funds. That'll be probably about $100 million fund. I think they've closed between 20 and 30 million so far, but they're going to be actively making investments in the different clusters that are in North Carolina. So you have healthcare, you have energy, you have IoT, you have cybersecurity, and you have nanotechnology. So
good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Jerry, how do we get a handle? How do we get contact the Wireless Resource Center?
Well, the best way is to go to our website, you know, and go to www.wirelesscenter-nc.org, and then follow the links from there.
And our Twitter handle is at WRC_NC. Scott, how do we reach you?
At thingovation.com or at Scott at thingovation.com.
Do you, David? I forgot.
No, you didn't do me, but you can certainly reach us at our website, which will have all the information you're looking for, which would be www.bright-wolf.com.
Well, this has been a great show. Hopefully, everybody has enjoyed themselves. So for the signing off as a Wireless Research Center and the Wireless Connection Show, thank you very much for attending and coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks.